I know. It fires hot.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. What do you say?
Do I look good in a beanie?
I don't have any opinion on that.
All right. I just figured I'd ask you because I'm trying it out.
Smoking hot.
I don't know if I'd look good in a beanie. No. I feel like I've got too big of a head.
No, I don't want to talk about that.
Okay. All right.
Okay. You're listening live from the Path. Here's what I got going on the show this week.
I'm not done with this beanie thing.
I think, no. Listen to me. You know how many times I've told you guys, hey, we get complaints because we babble on for the first few minutes of the show?
Oh, yeah.
And so I get on a track about it. I'm like, no, we're going to start. And you idiots come rolling in here, and you fire up a nonsense topic, and then I try to pivot away, and you're like, no, wait a minute.
No, let's go back.
Wait a minute. Gumby was definitely supported Barry Goldwater.
It's I know you knew us. That's doubled down in berating us. We were ready to go.
No, I feel good about what I said. All right, here's what we got going on the show. Boova's got a question about Saul.
I do, yes.
I promised in the description of the show that it will not be about the Witch of Endor. And no. So I think we have a non-Lady of Endor question.
We talked about that a couple weeks ago. I feel all right about the Witch of Endor.
Okay, we're good.
So, yes, I have another Saul question, but wrong Saul.
Oh, okay.
Kind of Saul. We'll talk about it.
Okay, got it. All right, so we're going to touch on that. And then we have, I was trying to think through stuff you might be praying. There was an article that said, like, hey, four things we're praying for the church about. And I hate that because it implies that you're just going to go accusatorily pray at someone else, like a broad group of people, when really you probably should just be going, I don't know, what should I be praying about myself and my direct circumstances?
Well, this is someone trying to correct the church?
I think so. Yeah,
the church is off its course, and I will pray for it.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm going to read them because there's only four. And I'm kind of curious on the reaction of, like, how might one should you, and then how might you reorient these to go, I mean, how would you pray that for yourself? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
And so
good log, friend.
So I have something like this. I'm going to give away a secret on the premise that my wife does not listen to this show at all. Okay. So if she comes back and listens to the program, it'll give away a secret that I've been holding on to for, I think, 3 or 4 months.
Holy cats, this is dangerous.
Yeah. She doesn't listen to the program. So I was at a conference. So I think I said in a previous show, I went to Hutch Boot with my daughter. And like I was looking for stuff in this library that they had. And I was going to get something for my wife. And they had this devotional written by one of the ladies that was there. But it was for like mothers, for ladies.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, I could get her. I'm going to get this for her because she actually likes doing those types of things.
This is something she would enjoy.
I've not done one ever. And so I get her this thing. And I decided, like, I bought it. And I said, okay, I mean, this is going to be good. I'll just give it to her when I get home as a gift because we're giving books to the other kids. And I thought, you know, this is really a missed opportunity. And so as opposed to just giving it to her, what I decided I was going to do was I was going to do this devotional, this daily devotional for my wife, and I'm going to read it, and I'm going to pray on it first for me on how can I support what this is calling my wife to.
Oh, yeah.
And then am I praying for my wife intentionally, knowing that, assuming all is scripturally righteous, this is what God is calling my wife to do, right?
So, it can't ever get a devotional from anybody.
That's true.
And then just, like, take it in. Like, I don't know about you.
I'd love to see you reading Max Lucado's Traveling Light Journal.
I'm going to say this is like 95% good, this one.
Here's Ben's review of even a devotional he liked. Now, I like most of the stuff this guy puts out. But I mean, it was a real stretch.
His theology on the Witch of Endor. That's not where Endor was.
I ordered two commentaries, and I proofread this thing.
The Golden Gay said about Endor, which actually in Hebrew meant the door.
Billy Graham, he's a stretcher.
Okay, listen to me. You've missed the point. I've done something beautiful for my wife. So anyway, I say that to say, as opposed to just going here, be a better lady.
Good point.
Of Christ.
Oh, crap.
This was me saying, how can I pray for her? And so here's my hope, is that by the time this is done, if I'm following the year, it should be somewhere like September, I think, is I will be able to go, here is a devotional I got you when I went to this conference thing, and I've prayed over it for a year for you.
That's cool.
Right. And so, I mean, one, it's kind of romantic. Like, it seems nice. But realistically, it has helped me shape my what I'm praying for when it comes to my wife, knowing that, like, if she's trying to be the best wife, mother, follower of Jesus, sure. And this is what's driving her, I have a part in that.
Yeah.
And then cool. I also have, like, I've also spent intentional prayer time praying for her for those types of things.
That's super cool.
Do you find yourself sometimes having, like, super, really superficial prayers for your wife?
Yes.
I do that. And I'll catch myself like, oh, bless my wife. And I'm like, okay. Now I got to stop and I'll have to, list five things or something. But
yeah,
that's really disappointing with me.
Totally.
Now do three put-ups, Dan.
I love my wife. Dear Lord, love her too. I mean, yeah.
I think that's one of the things that's been super helpful is I just presume, and this is the reason I brought this up is related to like praying for the church. It's like, I presume I have a part in whatever it is that is relevant to this person. And it's not just, hey, Lord, I'm really glad someone wrote this down. My wife really needs to hear this to be a better wife to me.
No, I don't have to say it.
Yeah, right. But it's
got
like,
you this book.
She needs, like, if this is what it looks like to follow Jesus well as a wife and a mother, then like, well, how can I help? There's a me in here. Where am I hindering her from being able to do this? Where am I not providing her support and encouragement to be able to do this or think this or... Where am I making it hard for her to do this? Like, it's harder to be a good wife when I'm a jackanapes of a husband, you know?
Yeah,
and so, like, where am I making her life harder as she tries to follow Jesus and be a good wife to me? And so, anyway, it's been helpful to me. And so I do wonder, like, this, hey, here's how I pray for the corporate church. There is a real value in going, well, maybe you should do that. But, like, you should also probably start by going, in what way is this relevant to me?
Totally.
And then how can I make life easier on the church to behave in such a way that I want them to, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we got some Dear Life from the Path. Mike, did you preview any of these things?
No.
Okay.
It's sometimes more fun when we don't.
Hopefully they're not scandalous.
Then it's like, oh, this is a funny one. Then we go to like, my son died yesterday. It's like, oh, man.
What should I do?
Really? Yeah. How do I mourn a son? Oh, sorry.
It's too big, sir. All right, here we go. This one was specifically four prayers for the Western Church in 2025.
Okay.
Okay, it's the start of a new year, and here are four key things meaning Jamie Bambrick, the church should be praying for in 2025. Number one, the sheep would recognize which shepherds were for sale. Ooh. If a Bible-believing Christian from a century ago were suddenly transported through time to our age and found that church leaders today endorse gay civil marriages and side B Christianity, what the heck is that? What's side B Christianity?
I mean, if side A Christianity was what they had 100 years ago, they're saying that like the turn of the tides, the flip of the CD is what Christianity looks like today.
CDs are only one-sided.
I think that's her way of saying
yeah, it's a record that has side B, right?
But
yeah.
It's still by the same author. It's a lesser-known hit. I don't care for this reference. All right, sorry.
I could tell.
Supported politicians who advocated for child sacrifice up until birth, advocated for functional end of nations through unlimited mass immigration. Okay, that's a stretch. And spent most of their time attacking believers. God, like God did not draw the boundaries here. Okay, spent most of their time attacking believers who oppose such positions.
I love Florida.
That one.
You did a lot of good lines here, friends.
Gosh. Okay. Anyway, they would have thought they were witnessing the unbinding of Satan at the end of the age.
Holy cow.
Okay.
This is a heavy.
I thought they were going to say the sheep would hear the shepherd's voice. That's what I thought the first thing was going to be.
No.
And that's
said the
not.
Sheep would know which shepherd's for sale, Mike.
Well, I would word it differently, but I'm totally in for that prayer.
Yeah.
Because there are some shepherds out there that are wolves.
Well, yeah.
You know, and that's really what she's trying to say. She's got real pointed.
Yeah. I appreciate that it's not like the church really sucks. It is, I'm going to pray for the sheep.
But yeah, if they have sheep wisdom and discern, hey, I shouldn't
hear the shepherd's
be
voice, then they don't listen to bad shepherds.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally fair.
Yeah.
I think the focus is just on
it was
the wrong
thing. It was a charged way to say the phrase, yeah.
Well, but I would say... I don't know. But some of these are borderline not even relevant from like a – they're not shepherds. Like, well, some of these are not shepherd problems. But to that point, though, like most of the New Testament writers were concerned about false teachers,
totally.
False leaders,
yeah.
And like not just –
it was super prevalent.
Like it was – yes, I think you roll it all up. If you – listening to Jesus, you're less likely to be taken in by impressionists. But like it seemed to be a relevant problem for even churches who are faithfully following Jesus.
That's right. Yeah. Paul's like they preach any gospel but the one that we did.
You tolerate the teachings of Jezebel.
Yeah. Okay.
Freaking Jezebel.
Okay, so how would you – as opposed to praying that out at everybody else, what does that look like to pray for yourself and your sphere of influence?
If you're representing the right gospel to the people around you, and there are more people doing that in their small circles, that's how that it gets influenced. Like mm-hmm. if you're prayerful, one, to make certain that you're in a place that you are recognizing the shepherd's voice, right? And then are using that like same message, the good news in your circle and circumstance. Like that's what you do rather than like hurling an insult at the church as a major thing. In your actual life, it's having community and being close to people that you can also show the love of God and like shine the right light of His and be an image bearer of His.
Yeah, it's like praying for the people around you that they wouldn't be taken in by a shadow or an impression of the gospel. Like they take in it for what it is, right? Because most people like false gospels come from ease. You know what I'm saying? Like false gospels come from matters of the heart that you don't want to submit.
Or yeah, ease or the playing of desire.
Yeah,
this is something I want, or here's something I don't really want to give up or do.
Right. Yes, yeah, exactly.
And so, like, we'll just take this and tweak it a minute, or we'll just ignore this part, or we'll act like what God said is good is actually not good because this will turn around quicker results for small, fleeting pleasures,
or just flat out not representing what He did say.
Yeah, sure, right. And so, like, almost all false gospels come from that. They take a thing that God said or a thing that they would like to tweak, and they just tweak it, right? And be like, it's mostly the good news. But, like, the good news is like the Holy Spirit. It comes as a whole package, right? Like, you get the whole thing, and just like the fruits of the Spirit. And so, like, anything that fools with that, like, that's a good – that I could find that to be reasonable to pray for the people around you.
Yeah.
That they take in the full gospel and the full counsel of Scripture and the full presence of the Holy Spirit. And don't let anything cheapen it.
Yeah. Half-truth gets you to the place where God loves you, and therefore you should get all the things that make you happy.
Yeah. Half-truth is not truth.
Exactly right. You're misrepresenting what the full truth of it is. It's like your joy and happiness come from God and what He calls good. And like, you can be blessed in certain ways, but that doesn't mean that you get all the things that you thought you should have. The really nice house and really nice car and never being in pain and all this different stuff. It's like, well, you read the real thing, it says very specifically that you should be prepared for legitimate like problems and issues, and God will allow you to walk through them.
Yeah, I pray often, regularly, weekly, that as a shepherd, I am listening to my shepherd, and I am representing him to his people, because they're not my people, and it's not my church, and because I also am influenced by, and that's what I think that first author's talking about, the pastors who've been bought. That there's been influence out there to try to sway churches a different direction. And so I pray for myself that I will not compromise. I would just listen to the shepherd. Every single time you teach, you have a theme you're going to follow. You have an angle you're going to go with. You decide what you're going to keep, what you're not. You know, you have this big mound of study you've done. And it's like, well, I'm taking this portion.
Sure.
And how do I determine that? You know, well, is it just, this is my agenda. This is what I want to do. This will do whatever. I always go that, God, this, what do you want for your people? So I guess that's how I personalize that prayer.
Yeah.
Because I want everybody to do that within their own local congregation, but I'm also got to be responsible in my congregation to make sure I'm not.
Yeah.
Going after my own agenda.
Yeah, they're listening to your voice. They need to hear his.
Yeah, exactly. I'm irrelevant. I can be replaced in a heartbeat.
Yes.
I would agree. Actually, those were the long lines I was thinking, which is I would pray for myself to, one, to know the difference, and to speak the difference so that people can know the difference.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's interesting just the direction this lady took it, or maybe it's a dude. I guess it's Jamie. Could be either one. But like, sometimes it means you don't stop. You don't speak.
Yeah.
Like the risk, I think, in some of these things is it's for sale from an agenda. And like, sometimes I'm real passionate about a thing that it's not Jesus's radar. It's just a thing that I'm not on I shouldn't be a soapbox about. And like, and the chance that it muddies the things that I know to be core and true, it's probably better I don't say.
Yeah.
And so, but knowing that, like, honoring that distinction, helping to protect that, then helps influence the church and lead and guide it in ways that it needed. So, like, okay. All right. Number two was the rise of courage.
Rise of courage.
Rise. Okay, we're going to pray for the rise of courage.
Yeah. Sounds like an Apostle Paul prayer. Pray that I might have boldness.
Yeah, right.
Speak the gospel clearly like I should.
I'm interested to hear how they're going to play Rise of Courage.
Okay, we'll see. Some have noted that certain cultural battles, which are by definition primarily theological battles, are actually being won. Things like the widespread pushback now being seen regarding things like transgender madness, a topic that was deemed untouchable just a few years ago, and Donald Trump's huge electoral victory are signs that when Christians actually fight, winning is possible, and that the world around us is growing somewhat tired of the insanity. This could be the start of a genuine shift in momentum. Courage is contagious, and seeing that fights are winnable encourages people to actually join in. Though it is, of course, good to notice who stood firm when it was not popular and the fight looked impossible, it is also wise to welcome to our side those who've taken longer than we would like to extricate themselves from their seat on the proverbial fence and to express appreciation for those who have finally opened their mouths after years of silence, particularly if they do so with something resembling repentance for being slow on the uptake. So it ranks high on my list of prayer priorities that the church would recover its courage as a whole, and rather than complaining if they do so that it didn't happen sooner, celebrate even flawed obedience. There was not a measure of a faithfulness to Jesus anywhere in this description. Primarily, we liked our political outcome, and I get that you've tied those together, but that is not the same thing.
Yeah, I would untie those and pray for courage.
Yes, yeah.
As followers of Jesus.
Let's keep the courage prayer. Gosh.
We started doing a thing. I mean, I've said this before, that we just did it in November, so it hasn't been long. There's an app where everybody does the QR code with their phone, and then everybody in the room goes to a different state throughout the globe, to a different country, a different state.
Yeah.
And it has a 1-minute countdown. It gives you little things to pray for. And so it gets our eyes out of us and out.
Sure, yeah.
Really, really cool. We've prayed for like 7% of the world so far. But it guides you through things and it made me think of that when I said the courage, not the political part of it, but like there's places where there's 2% Christian, and it's like, man, they need some courage.
Yeah.
I'm praying for these people in Vietnam or where it was recently in prayer. And it's just kind of cool. That part resonates with me.
Yeah. Yes.
The political part wasn't so.
Yeah, I listened to, I think a couple of us in the room actually do, but the Electio thing, it's like a daily prayer app that like you start with a prayer, and they actually just added a midday option and then an evening thing, right? And it's interesting because there's a lot of church history in there that I don't know and don't have. But the thing that's relevant here is there's a lot about like what's happening in different parts of the world that I sometimes lose sight of, admittedly, because I think sometimes we're so big-minded, we like forget about what work there is to do right in front of us. And so, but I've definitely gotten stuck sometimes where I'm so close-minded that I forget that like it's important to be mindful and prayerful for the church across the nations doing work, spreading the gospel in crazy parts of the world that I've never been to. Yeah. I've never thought about it like that. And it's like super important to take that step and look at that. Like there are massacres happening with Christians in other places, or not Christians at all, just people. And it's like, when was the last time I thought about and prayed for Thailand? When was the last time I thought about like less well-known nations in Africa that are under insane situations, whether governmentally or other societal situations. And so it was crazy to kind of take that step and blow that up and look bigger at that.
I think when you're praying for the kingdom of God, it helps you get beyond the political surrounding of whatever country you're in.
Yeah.
I mean, not that those aren't important and invaluable, but the kingdom's where we focus.
Yeah, so there's a shred of truth to the concept of the courage of the church and praying for that. When it comes to like how I can take that for myself, right, which was the original thought of we wanted to do for this piece, the same prayer just in your own life. Like it literally is, the right half of that prayer unbound. And then praying that specifically for myself and the courage that I have, the courage that I have personally and the courage that I'm encouraging others to have in my immediate circle around me.
I have the courage to be Jesus today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There was a third one. I'm going to skip it because like it's really, it's 3, protection from overreacting, but it seems to be like a 5-paragraph thing about some sort of 7 paragraphs.
Are you overreacting?
Yeah, maybe. Some sort of like current raging debate in reformed circles from names that I don't recognize and problems that seem like they shouldn't exist. And so we're going to skip that.
Okay.
Maybe it's a prayer to not be combative as a Christian.
Yeah, maybe, take that easy. And they're using actually what's funny is like we're name dropping. We're like, well, these 3 heavy hitters and these 3 heavy hitters. I'm like, It seems like a lot of people batting forth that I don't care. I don't know you.
I follow Paul. Exactly. I follow Apollos.
Yes, you're right.
Really makes me think of Athens. Yeah. Like, I heard this recently from a dude, and it's changed everything about me.
So, Mark, we'll go to number four, which is focus on the task at hand. Finally, I think we should pray for a renewed focus on what is actually in front of us. Year 2024, with it being an election year in the States, see, this guy's a one-trick pony, was one in which a disproportionate amount of mental focus was given to politics, and rightly so. But the fact of the matter, then it's not disproportional. Like, but the fact of the matter, it's like, it's not how language works, friend.
Yeah, it's a weird way to end that sentence in the argument that you're currently making.
Okay, here we go. But let's see if we can get to a place we can agree. But the fact of the matter is that there are churches to build or gather, children to raise, marriages to strengthen, friendships to work on, books to read, businesses to start, ideas to be understood, souls to be reached, prayers to be said, worship to be offered, and sermons to be preached. Most of which should not be centered around the latest White House press release. All right, good. He gets paid by the comma, but it's not bad.
It's a heck of a list.
The kingdom of God, though impacting the political sphere, is much broader than that. Many people in your life may not need the finer points of Christian political theory or of the post-millennial understanding of Israel right at this moment. Many of them need to be reminded of the gospel again, to know more about sanctification, to understand the nature of God more than they need to figure out what marginal tax rate God would have. He would not care. Though one does not have to be set against the other, we would be wise in the year ahead to think through our priorities and see which areas, particularly the less political ones, of the enormous mission God has handed us need some extra attention, and I'll be praying we do just that.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very long way to say that, but yeah.
Yeah, what was the prayer again? Because I
focus on the task
focus
at hand.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's been the same work for thousands of years now.
It is like me. Yeah. So it does feel like me going, though, hey, I'm going to spend all my time focused on remodeling my bathroom, and then I'm going to spend another big bunch of time like working on painting my car, and then I'm going to come in and look at everybody else and go, you know what we got to get back to? Cleaning the kitchen. And I know I spent all my time
rightly so
remodeling the bathroom and working on my car, but I tell you what, we should have, we don't need to get caught up in that nonsense that I just did. We need to go clean the kitchen floor.
There's a point. There's something there.
Okay, he's right.
Yeah, the kitchen needs to be clean.
Just a weird way of doing it.
I still say, and I say this all the time, that if we're making disciples, we don't have to worry about all the political stuff that everybody gets all hyped up about. Just let people be like Jesus and let him take care of it.
Yeah. Yeah, at some point, like...
But we need to make a legislation, Dan.
Yes.
I think that's the problem, right? It's because, like, the political landscape... Like, Ben's right. Like, it feels like a victory. Right, it feels like we're on the upswing, or the tides are turning, or what, or however you want to look at it, right? But like the political landscape is not a good indication if the Son of God is present, right? And like that's a cursory reading of the Bible, you know, like you know what I'm saying? Like the political landscape is not a good representation of the movement of God.
Yeah, it's every other king.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. It's Asher pulls it back up, boys.
Yeah.
We're on the uptick. Asher pulls were taken back down. Give it a few years.
Yeah, we're lucky if it's a third. And here's the thing: it's like somebody still knows how to make the Asherah poles, right? Like we take them all down, we get through a generation of a king, and we're like, man, remember when we had those poles? Who knows how to make them? Well, Earl still makes them. Oh, well, let's get them mass produced, Earl. We're back to the Asherah.
We took them down, but we never destroyed them. They're just in the back alley.
Dust them off.
Dust them off. Put them back up.
I'm not
praise.
It's a good point that like the it's what is old is always new again. And I was lamenting just before the show started is that like any perception you have of victory is already likely on its way down, perverted by power, corruption, people using what is what are righteous things of Jesus for their own greed and gain, mm-hmm. including people. And like the dangerous part of all those equations is people. And like people, like folks who are willing to influence, abuse, and take power over people are willing to grab any idea that will deliver it to them, whether it's an idea you agree with or the idea that's on the opposite side of it. And so there is no safe harbor in whatever political situation you believe they're in. It may give you some space.
Yeah. Maybe Paul doesn't get his butt whooped in this town.
Right. Like, it's not that it's not like it's all dour and like you can appreciate positive movements and different changes that are good. But like, do not make it sound like you turned the chapter. You did not flip the book. And so I would just be cautious about that.
Yeah, I think that the biggest, and even that article just screams it a little bit, right? Like the tendency to go, like culturally, even if it's more siding with a shadow of what Christianity might look like, right? Like people are like, we've arrived, our work is done. Like we've done all this stuff that has gotten us here, and now we can enjoy the spoils. But like that's not the call, right? Jesus says, go out, make disciples of the world, which means there is no victory in which you stop. There is no right. There's no stopping point where you go, okay, good, we've accomplished our mission. And like, as long as there's still people breathing and there's room on the streets of gold for them to walk, we're out. We're out in the world, like talking to people about why God is good, you know? And so like, I'm not saying that like these aren't good things to pray for. They just seem shaded in a way where like it just feels like the gospel's a little bit purer than this.
What would you say,
and easier?
What would you? And it doesn't have to be four, but like, what jumps to mind that like this would be a thing to focus on?
Oh, to pray for?
Yeah. What would you put on the list?
I would for sure pray. If I was praying for the people around me, it would mostly be that that they would see God rightly and they would see themselves rightly. Those two things come into focus. It changes the whole thing.
I think when we were talking before the show, like I think I would pray for the people around me and more specifically for myself, pursue holiness.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about it. Like if I'm pursuing holiness and that is a daily walk with my Father and I'm trending upwards to Him and that is what my life looks like. And then the people around me are doing that too. It is a good day.
Yeah. What does a church body look like where like, this is going to sound terrible because like missions aren't like schemes. You know what I'm saying? Like, but like if the church body took 6 months and everybody was in their scriptures every day and everybody spent time praying,
change.
Right. And like you weren't like, hey, people probably want a prayer Tuesday night. We should put one together. But like they clamored for it. They're like, we're already doing prayer Tuesday night. If you want to put a sign up, great. But we're already, we organized it without you, Dan. We're just, can we have keys? Like, we're coming in, yeah. And this is what we're going to do. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't know that we've ever tried that. What we try to do is like, well, let's set up a class. We'll get you some childcare. Maybe we'll do a fun VBS. We'll do a dude's night where we shoot something. Like, they're like I'm saying, I'm not saying they're bad, right? But what I'm saying is like, they feel like shadows. They're not outpourings of the 6 months we put in, right? They're the end result of making it look like we put the 6 months in.
Yeah, so it's the difference between like the church as an organizer versus the church as the like kind of the codifier.
Yeah,
right. Like as opposed, it doesn't have anything to do with like a church leadership or the building or whatever. Like it's the question is like the are the people are active. Like people are behaving in a way that that reflects the eyes of Jesus into the world and the desires of Jesus into the world and the lamenting of what it looks like to ignore Jesus in the world, and it drives them to action. Actually, this came up in something we were talking about over the weekend, was that like it is very – it's foreign to the Bible like emotions that don't carry some implicit type of action to them. And like we've talked about love before, but even like in 1 Samuel 11, there's after the Ammonite king shows up, and he basically he goes to the Israelites in Gilead or something and goes, hey, I want to conquer you, and they're like, well, oh, and I'm gonna pluck your eyes out. They're like, well, give us a week, see if we can't find someone to help defend us. And anyway, they send word and it gets to Saul, who's like newly crowned king, and he's like bringing his oxen in. And it says Saul was angered. And we look at that and we read it as like angered, like he felt anger. But like that isn't what it's getting at. Like he was angered to action
and went and took on the snake.
Like there are not Bible references where people are just like having emotions of which the motion feeling itself was the action. Like the presumption is that the stirring up of lament and anger and love drive that something that you do. And like we don't think of it that way. It's that's how we get to like, for God so loved the world, like, and we love other people, and it feels like a feeling.
I really think highly of them. but don't do anything for them.
Yeah, and the same thing is to feel like, hey, you know, and Dan, I'm sure, has run into this. Like, if you think about your work in Zimbabwe, like, oh, I was so touched by your presentation and the things that are going on in the villages. And some people move to that. And then some people go, I was touched. It made me feel something for this. And then I did nothing in reaction to this. Or our city, there's all kinds of troubles in the city, and we should feel something about that. But we did nothing with this as a reaction. And so, like, I think, like, if that is a thing, is to maybe look, if I trust the words of Scripture, if I trust the things that the truth that is relaying to me, remove cultural barriers to me recognizing them for what they are, like things like that.
Yeah. That's it. As you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, but what about, like, when people were just moved really sad and then they'd, like, cover themselves in dirt and rip their clothes and stuff? And I was like, wait, that's the thing they did. Like that was the outward expression of a thing that they felt. Like, they weren't just sad and went, oh, man, it was a bad day today. They're like, I'm sad and I'm going to change my physical manifestation in this situation to show how I've been moved by that thing happening.
Yeah.
Fasting, whatever that looks like, literally just wearing sackcloth for a while and covering yourself in dirt for a bit. Like, this, it's not just I felt bad about the situation. It's like, I need something to represent physically and out into the world what is happening in here.
And it's not like just a, oh, I'm holy if I wear the sackcloth. It's a communication.
Yes, right.
We know this because somebody saw the guy. Yeah. Like, there he was.
Yeah.
Out and about in the ash, right, in the sackcloth.
I'm not going to eat for 3 days. Yeah, yeah. You noticed that.
And I don't mean to imply that, like, the only way to respond to heavy emotion is to go attempt to fix the problem.
Right.
Sometimes that is the right reaction. I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but I am saying that, like, I think the satisfaction with either the accumulation of knowledge or the accumulation of emotion is doing a disservice for what it looks like for the hands and feet and eyebrows and elbows of Jesus to, sure, go do work out into the world.
That makes sense. Hmm. Eyebrows and elbow.
Okay. All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. I think, okay, there was one other thing, and we're not going to read the whole article here, but just to remind ourselves of places of which, you know, we might be able to step into this thing. The share of evangelicals who have donated to their church has dropped in recent years, with nearly one-third saying they didn't donate to a church or charity within the prior 12 months. Poll found that 61% of respondents donated to a church in the 12 months preceding the survey. This figure constituted a drop from 74% of evangelicals who gave to a church in 2021. Dan, are you seeing this kind of broadly?
No.
No, Dan's not seeing it. I wonder how much it correlates to people stopping going to churches.
Like, I mean, that's quite possible. I don't know. Yeah, no, we're...
Let's see here. Do they see if they had any particular takeaways? Proportion who gave to either church or charity dropped 24% among the lowest income evangelicals. Okay, yeah, it could be a rise in, But also 7% among those earning 100 grand or more, fell 21% among people who infrequently or never attend church worship service, but also 10% among those who attend at least once a month, fell 19% among the youngest evangelicals, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Anyway, I pointed out, maybe just to hit some of the stuff that we were talking about, I actually don't even care what it's your church or charity. There's no record of me giving to a church or charity over the last, I don't know, however long I've been doing it. We've been doing house church, so right, 6-7 years or something like that. We're giving. It's just not taxably traceable. And so I don't know. If that's what we mean, then okay. I mean, maybe. But I'm not guessing that that's actually the result of our 7% or 21% declines. And, like, I don't care if it's the church you're going to or whatever. Like, I will remind us from a Western perspective, the thing that comes easiest to you, probably more so than everyone else, is probably your income. And it is a relatively easy way to check. I don't measure it by, like, the more I give, the more I love Jesus. But, like, if there's not something about yourself that you are giving of what God is giving you,
yeah, right,
out to other people, I would make sure it's not an obedience thing. And perfect. I actually don't even have any problem with, like, hey, people can't afford to it. The standard of living in the United States is just different. It takes more money to even be at the line,
yeah,
around here. But I would say don't check the size of it, but I would make sure you're praying and saying, God, am I giving you everything? Am I open to what you want to do with the money that you've given me steward, sure, of? Just like I was praying this morning, actually, around it wasn't clear to me, or obvious to me, let me put it that way, that I had handed over every one of my work interactions to Jesus.
Hmm.
And not just like, hey, may I share the gospel with Freddie today? I got a call with him at 3:30. I don't necessarily mean that, but like, I don't know. Have I evaluated my reactions to people, the framing of how I go about something, even forgiveness on like people and extending trust and stuff like this.
Sure.
Just things that I thought, I don't know. It doesn't always seem like it's applicable, but it's possible that I've not actually given it.
Yeah.
Did I say, look, you get this. This meeting's yours, this break is yours, this thing is yours. And so I said, well, I'm trying to be intentional about that this week, make sure I'm focusing on it. And so it's like that. I think about giving that way. So.
Sure.
You remember, I think Dave Herrick was on the show, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. Who remembers? But he said, we were talking about going out to eat with people, and he said a phrase that I've never forgotten. He's like, you should pay for it. I'm like, well, you know, he goes, tell him you have a backer. I'm like, a backer? He's like, it's Jesus. Jesus is your backer. And I thought, what a freaking weird thing to say. You know? But then, so I've put this into practice, right? Yeah. Like, I will pay for, and people get super mad at me. Like, it makes them super awkward, right? Like I set money aside on purpose to be able to be generous in this way. Yeah. Or like, if we were not planning on going out to eat, but someone was there, and we're like, well, let's go out to eat. You know, I'm like, this is perfect. This comes right out of the generosity fund. No problem. Let's do it. And they're like, they feel real awkward about it. And they're like, I had someone tell me last week, they're like, you have to stop doing this. I'm like, oh, what do you mean I have to stop doing this? Like, you can't keep doing this. I'm serious. And they were very mad at me because like, it just keeps coming up that like, they happen to be in a group that I paid for a thing a couple times.
I'll go out to eat with you.
That's what I'm saying. And so I thought, man, I feel like I should explain why. You know that, but I'm like, I don't really want to. I don't really want to explain. I just want to pay for it and be done with it. Now, I don't want it to be awkward and weird. You know what I'm saying? But like, it creates way more awkwardness than I thought.
Yeah.
Like when faced in that with using Jesus as my backer, who just pays for meals for people, and like, because it's people that could pay for their own meals.
Sure.
They're not like a homeless group of people. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're legit folks. They have jobs. They have kids. Like, they have responsibilities. They could pay if they wanted to. And they went out with the premise that they were gonna. And I'm like, I'll take the check. You know what I'm saying? Not to be like some kind of Daddy Warbucks, but I'm like, Eric said, Jesus is the backer. I'm like, and if I have it, then I should, right? Why not? I've never regretted any money going out of my household for somebody else.
Yes, right.
I have regretted purchases that I've made.
Totally, yeah.
For my own self. But I've never once thought I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have been generous in that way to somebody. It was irresponsible.
Yeah. I tell you what, I don't know why this popped into my mind. It was probably 2 weeks ago, but I was doing kind of like a accountability group with a guy. This has probably been 15 years ago. And we would go out to this cozy cafe here in Johnston. Is this still open, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, they had a pretty good egg special in the morning. And so we go out there and like, we just would like trade off. We'd go out and then I'd cover the check 1 week and the next week or 2 weeks from there, he'd be like, okay, I got it. And there was a guy who he didn't know Jesus or anything, but like me and this other dude, he was a mutual kind of acquaintance. I said, hey, you should come out and have breakfast with us and maybe give him a chance to get to know us and see the kind of things we're talking about or whatever. And the first week he was there, I picked up the check. I'm like, no problem. Hey, I got it. No problem this week. This is great. And he came back the next week and he said, oh, I'll get it this time. And I wanted to let him get it because he had volunteered to do it. And then he never came out with us again. And it made me think that, like, I'm actually not sure that his family probably could afford that. He probably would have a hard time justifying coming out with us at all, let alone picking up three checks. And I kind of knew that at the time, but it felt wrong to kind of insist, like to say, no, man, let me get it for you. Because it almost – I was kind of concerned that it would make him feel like – less than a, you know.
Sure, yeah.
But it put it in a real, what felt like a real awkward situation because, like, he probably couldn't continue to come out because now it felt like he established the pattern that he was going to pick up this check every so often, you know?
Yeah.
But it would be hard to say, no, I actually can't. That would be kind of an awkward thing to do. And so then I thought, I came to that. It was just easier if I'd have just always said, look, I always got this. Don't,
yeah.
Don't worry about it. And so anyway, it was just so it was a regret, and I can't fix it. There's nothing I can do about it. Guys recently moved out of state, and I wouldn't even know how to bring it up. And I don't know if apologies are in order. It's not quite what he would make him feel real awkward. And I didn't do anything wrong necessarily. Yeah. But anyway, it's interesting to think about like what the presence of perceived generosity or even money does to a dynamic that I had totally just asked in there because we thought this would be kind of cool. And it didn't go the way I wanted. Anyway, yeah. Laments from Ben, 2025.
Excellent.
Okay. All right, you're listening live from the Path. One thing that our family did this last, I think it was yesterday, that I thought was kind of fun. As we were going back, we're not good at goals. I'm terrible at the goals, to be honest with you. I think we're going to do them anyway because it seems like a real good thing to do. But a friend of ours had said that their family was working to focus on, you start moving on forward to like, what am I going to do for next year? Which inevitably you're probably not going to make or whatever. And so all you're setting yourself for what feels like a series of, well, here's my recollection of this year, which I fell short. And so we intentionally said, look, let's take 10 minutes and everybody write down, what were you thankful for in 2024? What made you happy? What have gratitude for? And they were primarily focused on like things that seemed real simple. Like if I was going through my list was like, I'm thankful, for example, I have an old house and it's drafty as crap. And we keep the thermostat at 67. I have a thing to kind of gauge the temperature in some of the rooms in my house. I put it next to my up in this one room in my upstairs. It's 22 degrees coming because we got a leak window or something. And so like the upstairs is probably 10 degrees lower than 67. It's freezing knickers cold up there. My office is in a tool shed that I've finished and put a hotel unit in there. It's broken. The temperature gauge don't work. So that bastard's running all the time. It's 50. It's like 57 degrees in my upstairs. It's 78 in my office. And I love it. And so like I'm just thinking back like just like not where did I accomplish major things, but like what makes me happy about my 2024. I'm grateful for an office that's 10 degrees warmer than the rest of my house. I'm grateful for that I get to do daddy daughter and daddy dude dates with my kids. I am thankful for I got to be Mike's daughter and my niece, and then my daughter wrote a book that I talked about a few weeks ago. Like I'm grateful they even care what I thought as they were going through the process.
Sure.
And so I mean it was a pretty good list and it's a pretty fun list, and I figured I was thinking what was I just like, you know, this is pretty right on. This is pretty good. And like one of them was I was sick, not like death sick, but like kind of sick over Thanksgiving to the extent that everyone else, we're going to a family function and like I probably shouldn't go because there's going to be a blue hair there and you don't want them to pick it up. And so like I was at home by myself on Thanksgiving watching a game of football in a mostly dark house. I saw the whole game. I've not seen a whole game of football for a long time. And like it was quiet in the house and like it was very peaceful. And so anyway, I bet I had 25 things that if I look back and I go, that was pretty great. That was pretty great. That was pretty great. And they were like, some of them were quirky things. Some of them were relational things. Some of them were just like, you know, every once in a while the show broadcasts to YouTube and the audio was good and I didn't have to do anything. And what an awesome, I'm grateful when that happens. And I don't think it's happening tonight. Like, so anyway, it was a very good exercise, and I do, and it's something that our family needs to focus on, but maybe it's something your family could focus on. But like, as you think about goals and stuff for 2025, maybe take a few moments and go, as I think about the year that just passed, what am I grateful for? Small things, big things, things that you maybe influence how you think about your goals and stuff. But anyway, it was a fun exercise. Some of them were funny, but I think it was very helpful to look back in gratefulness of things of that sometimes were very, very simple about your life. So anyway, just an encouragement in case you, that could be valuable. Also, if you want to pick up that book, you go to Amazon. Just go to Amazon and search for the 1,000 Balloons. And that's going to be by Emma Foost and Evelyn Foost. And yeah, it's a good book. Mike's making his way through.
Yeah, I'm on chapter 22.
Mike ain't nice. Read a full book.
I've never read a full book. I've read the Bible. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
I mean, it's a pretty good one to have gotten down.
I know. It's got a lot of ups and downs.
All right, Bova, you want to add? You got a question about Saul, but not Old Testament Saul.
Yeah, but they're both involved.
Okay, hit me.
So Saul's mammy and pappy, Saul of Tarsus.
Okay, yep.
They were Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They knew who King Saul was.
Yes.
And they knew that that story was pretty rough. like the story of Saul is not one that goes, oh boy.
Yeah.
He hurled spears at people playing music for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then his own kid.
It's like naming your kid Judas or Barabbas.
They knew, right? Like they knew who Saul was, and they were like, you know what we're going to do? Because, like, names were very important, and they usually meant something. And, like, that's a cool thing. It's one of the things I love about Hebrew culture, or Hebrew culture, Jewish culture, all that. I love the fact that, like, these names are like, yeah, we named them this because the Lord was doing this in this situation. We named them that because that was happening in our circumstances. And then friggin' Saul's mom and dad are like, look at that beautiful baby boy that we just had. We're so blessed with. We're excited. In 8 days, we'll circumcise him. It's good things. Let's name him Saul. Because, right. Like, you know who was the best? Saul. Like, there was a lot of names to choose from, and that's the one they did.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy. I don't expect an answer from the pastors in this one of like, well, actually, we find out in Galatians 2 that Saul was... And I know I didn't find that anywhere, but, like, it's kind of weird if you take a step back that they went, you know what we're going to do to, like, pronounce a blessing on our child is we're going to name them Saul. And I wonder if you're looking up what the name Saul means.
No, I know what the name Saul means.
Oh, cool. Okay, so, like... Am I crazy for having that thought? Am I missing something just staring me right in the face in the story of the fact that a Jew, like a 900 to like 1200 years after Saul, named their kid Saul?
Yeah, so a couple considerations. So I think what the name means is actually pretty important. It means there's variations of it, but like it's something like you asked for this or prayed for. And so the context is you may have that may mean it's more personal to them. It's not an honorific to King Saul. It's like we prayed for this child and God answered.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
I knew it was going to be something that it meant something like that.
It could be that. Now, the other consideration, too, is that if you look in some of the, like, I'm going to say Jewish commentaries, like the Mishnah, like the rabbi's reflection on scripture, they did not take in Saul near as harshly as Christians render him.
Okay.
So like there, if you think about stories around Saul gets anointed as a king by Samuel, and then he doesn't tell his uncle. And we're like, why wouldn't you tell your uncle? Like that's weird. And it's building a vibe that like maybe this man is not king material. And then it's time to find him and to actually like present him at Mizpah. And they section them off by like all the different tribes or whatever, and then they go by the dads and like to get down to him, and he's not there. You get to Kish, and he's hiding in the luggage.
Yeah,
and you're like, what? This is not king material. And then like the third example that fits this is that like after that you get some of these. The most of your translations will say like worthless men who don't support him. It's sons of Belial, which is sons of perdition.
Yeah,
it's the same like thing for Judas, but. They refuse to give him a gift. It's an offense to the new king, and he doesn't do anything about it. And so a lot of times we'll look back on it and go, I mean, the signs were all there. This guy's not king material. Like, he's just tall. He's the king. He's a king.
And he stood above the others.
That are like a king like the other nations have. He's tall and he looks strong, but like he's not demonstrating either faithfulness to Yahweh or any of the qualities of which you would expect him to do. He hides from responsibility. He's dumb. He doesn't seem to catch on. His servant knows more about dealing with Samuel than he does. And so there's all these indications where we're like, they were laying the groundwork. A lot of the rabbis would look back and go, oh, look how humble Saul was. He didn't try to like stand up front and take his place. He was he recognized what was in front of him, the responsibilities, and was in the luggage. And like, or see how he didn't take any vengeance upon these people because he was humble. And so there are like now here's with Samuel's indictment of their requesting a king, and then ultimately when he talks to Saul after Saul fails to wait.
Yeah,
it's certainly clear that Saul was rendered an ineffective king. But It is not as probably not as a slam dunk, like Saul just kind of sucks.
Okay.
The rabbis were kind to him, some of them anyway, in the reflection of his kingship. And so it could be that they just don't see it so bad as perhaps I might.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, because I was, it just hit me the other day. Like, I was thinking about it and I was like, wait a minute, Saul. What?
Yeah.
Why would you name your kid that? Like,
they
goes?
They just didn't think of names like we do. You know, we're like, hey, we have a son. Oh, Elvis would be cool.
Right. Yeah.
He'll play guitar. You know, it like, yeah. Man, say, you know, it has meaning to it.
Is it kind of odd that no one like grabbed on to great biblical characters? Like, no one's like, we should name our kid Moses. You know what I'm saying? And instead, it almost feels like they were trying to get away with it, get away from. They're like Adam and Joseph and Moses, and they're like, all right, what's the farthest thing we can get from that? Mahomamith. This kid will be named Mahomamith.
Yeah, that's true. You don't see any more Adams.
No. No Adams. Yeah. No Josephs.
This is our new kid, Adam.
This is...
Oh, yeah, you named your kid, man?
Johafa Wafahaya.
Zerubbabel.
He is Mahomamith's brother. Why don't we just name him Cain? We're not naming him Cain.
You would expect more Abels?
Yeah. I feel like right in the beginning, God's like, now keep it simple. Just like four letter names.
Adam.
Don't be going crazy. And then the fall happens.
Four generations later. And Methuselah.
People are like, I'm Biafarafa now.
You think it's the result of the Tower of Babel?
Yeah.
Like he confused their languages.
He confused their language and they're like,
yeah, look where it happened. Like everybody's like, hey, this is Lamech.
Jehoshaphat.
This is a Moses. This is like five letter names. It's Aaron, right? Just regular dudes. And then all of a sudden Tower of Babel falls and everybody's like, this is Tamola, la la la, la la Mika. I guess.
This is so offensive culturally what we're doing.
And they're
really
like,
is.
They're like, well, it's got Aya in it, so that's to Yahweh. I'm like, okay, you basically just strung 15 letters together and then put I at the end, and you're like, Yahweh.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It is interesting, though. The evolution of names in the Old Testament is actually kind of curious.
Yeah.
Huh. And then we get to the New Testament, John.
Wait a minute.
Then we're back.
You know what's interesting?
New creation.
Do you think there's any relationship? I'm thinking about, has anybody read the book Freakonomics?
Yes.
So there was a question of the relationship between like names, especially ethnic sounding names, and like the types of jobs and things you could get, and like there's a correlation there. And so like if you're too rudimentary about it, you're like, the presumption is like, well, what kind of people from what economic background name their kids these things, and that's the reason they're not getting a job. But like some of it simply has to do with the name itself. Mm-hmm. Like, and so people have a bias or perception into it. And so, but think about it. None of the really complicated names are the names of the books, right? You get in the middle of the exile and you're still getting, oh, Daniel, and you're getting Isaiah, and you're getting Ruth. You know, you're not getting these.
Yeah.
None of those guys are putting pen to paper.
What's going on with that dude? His name's Ezra.
Okay. It did come back around though about the prophets, right? Like if you look at like Job, Ruth, Boaz, right, like this, we're back to four-letter regular living names.
Amos,
Joel,
Micah.
Yeah.
What?
And then Habakkuk.
What's going? Well, okay, he's a.
I think he chose on a turkey bone. They're like, what do you want to call it? I guess.
Sure, somebody's done a doctoral thesis on that somewhere
out
there.
I'm super curious. I'm gonna.
The father of Habakkuk was choking when he pronounced the name of the child.
Actually, it's more of like it's Habakkuk. So it's more like a Habakkuk.
It's Habakkuk.
Habakkuk. Anyway.
Burn flame.
You're listening to Live from the Path. Sorry about that if you're wearing the headphones. I'm sure that Habakkuk thing wasn't good on you.
Why were those names so wildly big?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as, like, in a lot of the naming conventions, aren't they, like, amalgamations of multiple words being kind of forced into the same word to be a name? Like, I thought there's one that I was trying to remember. Like, not Moshe. Moses was Moshe, if I remember correctly. I might be totally wrong on that, but like,
yeah.
There's like something about the reeds that's within the words that make up his name, and it's like two things that have to do with the situation that actually led to Moshe being the name that's the amalgamation. So I wonder if stuff like Jehoshaphat is actually like a phrase that's actually being truncated into a name based off of the words that make the phrase.
Mm. Okay, hold on.
Are you using the AI?
No, ESV.
Okay.
King Solomon was king over all of Israel, and these were his high officials. Azariah, the son of Zadok the priest. That makes sense. Elhoref, and Ahijah, and Shisha, and Jehoshaphat and Elihud and Benaniah and Jehoiada and Abiathar, Azariah, Nathan, he's regular.
He's regular.
Again.
Abiathar the priest.
Ben Decker. Shahalbim.
It's not regular just because you recognize the name.
Be quiet.
Nahathan.
Beth Shemesh. I mean, what are we doing here?
That was the name of a town.
House of, wasn't it?
Yeah.
House of Shemesh?
Yeah, but Shemesh is not, like, it's not a proper name. Shemesh is like, I don't know, it means something.
Bethlehem is because the city of bread.
There's towns called that, Beth
town
Shemesh.
Town of bread, or, yeah, right.
Ben Abinadab. Nahathdor.
That's the
hyphens. Where are these hyphens coming from? Is there a hyphen in Hebrew? Are we adding the hyphens?
No, we're adding the hyphens.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I'm kind of curious. I will be willing to ask AI about it. That's probably the far as I'll go. Tell me this. Give me your wisdom, old AI.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks for answering my Saul question, fellas.
Yeah.
Much appreciated.
You're welcome. All right, Mike, we got some advice on Dear Life from the Path.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
Dear Life from the Path, I've got a long, difficult, discernible name to Western ears, primarily Mike Foost. What should I do?
Can we just agree that they got difficult in the middle there?
They are different. That's what I actually don't understand.
Difficult in the middle is such a fun way to put that.
Well, right, but like they should all be different. That's actually what, maybe it's just a translation thing, but like it is curious that the dominant names don't have the, I don't want to say complications, but like they're just not as, they're simpler.
Maybe we've Englishified them.
Well, Moses is English. Like,
obviously. Right, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah, right. Never mind.
I actually don't even understand that. I don't understand how we got into this business of like taking someone's legitimate name that their mama gave them and then making it sound like a name that we recognize. Like, I don't understand.
Isn't it like telling of the fact that this is like the fourth language it was translated into? Like, didn't it go like Hebrew into Aramaic, into Greek, then into Latin, and then German, and then now we've got our way down to English?
Yeah, but why do we say Jesus and not Yeshua, right? Like, his name was Yeshua.
But Jesus was Greek.
Jesus is Greek.
Yes. Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah. But like, so, yeah, that's what I don't understand. Like, if his mama called him Yeshua, why didn't you just, like...
Just
why don't you just call him Yeshua?
Yeah.
He's
just wanted to Europeanize it.
Isn't that where Jehovah comes from too? Is like we get the name of God because like they didn't want to continue the spelling of God into the like later translations, and so they took the letters of Jehovah and then the Greek phrase ego e mi and put Yahweh into Jehovah using the vowels of ego e mi into the consonants of Yahweh.
I think it's
that might be a way oversimplification, but I thought that
actually
was
it's simpler than that. It's a mistranslation of but the broad point is correct. They didn't want to say Yahweh, like they didn't want to say the name,
commonize it,
and they didn't want to write down. That's why we don't get the right.
Well, but Jehovah is still actually attempting to do that.
Yeah. Oh, okay, got it.
It was just like it had to do with the letter pointing in Hebrew, but like it indicates though, It is curious. I just don't understand it. It'd be like saying, like someone, Miguel, you meet a guy whose mama calls him Miguel, and I go, you know what? That's unfamiliar to me. Give me a name in my language that I could be comfortable with.
Yeah, that's
true. We did that at Ellis Island for a long time, didn't we?
That's like saying, like, hey, this is Vladimir Putin. You're like, well, this is Vince Parsons.
Yeah.
Vince Parsons.
Hi, my name's Michael. You mean Michael?
Like, his name's Vladimir, right? He's just Russian. And so, like, why would we change it to be something like, to make his name sound that he's not Russian?
I mean, there's probably a lot of this that was happening that people didn't feel this way for a couple hundred years to when it was like, yeah, no, change your name into my language. I don't want to say that name. That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael, you're Michael.
Vince Parsons. Here we go. Parsons. Dear Life from the Path. I've been an amateur astronomer for 25 plus years.
Me too.
I always go meteor watching as well as observe any celestial events. This year, I invited my brother-in-law and his wife to watch a meteor shower with my husband and me. Since we both have campers, I reserved and paid the deposit for two camping sites at a nice location close to some of the best night skies. The reservations were made more than a month ago. My sister-in-law, who I dearly love and have been good friends with for more than 20 years, called me yesterday to let me know that my brother-in-law had invited three of their preteen granddaughters. Life from the Path, I thought they understood it would be an adult event, and we'll be up half the night and traveling 30 minutes to get to the dark sky site. I do this every year. I told my sister-in-law that my brother-in-law should ask me first, since I invited them and made all the arrangements for this event. We talked on the phone for 90 minutes before I told her my brother-in-law was wrong for not asking me first if it was okay. Moments after we hung up, she texted me and said to cancel their reservation because they would not be attending. We were driving 90 miles to the campsite. They live 30 minutes from it. Was I wrong to tell her I should have been asked first since I am the hostess for 2 days and nights?
I'm most confused because you said sister-in-law and brother-in-law in the same marriage.
Yeah.
So you're in-laws with two human beings? None of them are your sibling?
Yeah, it sure sounds that way.
I don't know. Maybe well, I'm just too tired to understand.
Yeah.
Spouse, they both been in-laws.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, see, yeah. I figured it might be something dumb like that as I was saying it. Thank you, Dan.
What good was point. The offense
you understand
here?
The world.
I'm here for clarity.
They called me yesterday and let me know that my brother-in-law had invited three of their preteen granddaughters.
So it's two old couples.
Got it.
Yeah.
But you can still do what you want to do at the camp without making a big deal of it and say, hey, we're going to go off and do this. You guys can stay with your kids. We do this every year.
You are old enough that you should never assume that something is implied in a relational situation.
Yeah, if we don't you know what you do at
if
night.
It was so right. serious that you as an amateur astronomer for 25 years now would be so offended that they would invite other people. It sounds like it should have been important enough for you to say, by the way, we do try and make this a very serious event. It means a lot to me because I care a lot about the celestial bodies in our universe, and I'd like to look at them. And other people might be a hindrance to that. So, like, by the way, we're extending an invite to you because we expect a certain level of respect for the situation. Please consider that as you walk towards it.
You don't find it a little bit rude that someone bought a campsite for you and then you invited three more people?
If they're in the camper,
it's a
though,
family thing, yeah.
Right. What does it matter?
Yeah, we're going out camping 30 minutes away. Y'all want to come
with?
What
they heard is we're going camping. Yeah.
They get to spend time with their granddaughter. They're three preteen granddaughters, right? Meaning as in it's their grandchildren. Not like a granddaughter and her two buddies.
I think it would be different if someone got me a campsite and then I invited like Boova and his wife.
Yeah.
And then you and your wife. That would feel weird to me. Because like basically I extended a party where I can enjoy the time without these people. But the bringing of like my kids or like grandkids, which I would consider similar, wouldn't feel odd to me at all. And I would frankly be surprised.
I mean, that someone would have home?
What an opportunity to share that with the grandkids.
They're their granddaughters. Like, they don't live with you.
I mean, they might.
Right. They're the grands.
Sometimes.
Yeah, granddaughters. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to sympathize with this gal a little bit that, like, she set up a thing assuming the dynamic would be two couples hanging out.
Sure.
And then when you brought three preteen girls to the outfit, like, you pretty much took all that off the table because now you're babysitting.
I mean, is the noise going to scare the stars away or something? Like,
I think it's
didn't they say they have to, like, hike 30 minutes from
like,
the
okay,
campers,
yeah,
too?
It will be noisy.
I think it's the dynamic of the thing. Like, you were trying to share something with another couple, and then they basically brought a situation where they're going to have to, like, babysit three kids now. And now, like, it's all different.
The preteens. Like, that makes me think, like, 11 and 12.
I would have just, I would have
You don't think they would have asked, like you should have said, hey, I was thinking about bringing my granddaughters. What do you think?
Definitely, it could have been a conversation that said, hey, what do you think about me bringing the granddaughters? They really want to come with, or we would love them to come out. It absolutely could have been a conversation. Undoubtedly, there's sympathy that could be had for this amateur astronomer. To the extent that it feels like this person is, it's just ruined their experience, and now they just feel very betrayed that the people have backed out from the circumstance. Like, it just feels like there's a lot of hurt in this situation, and I don't know how much I would agree with that being warranted, but it certainly is fair to say there should have been a conversation on both ends.
Anybody ever gotten those free ice cream coupons at the Culver's?
Oh yeah,
and the kids' meal,
the Scoopies
or whatever.
Yeah,
Scoopy. Yeah.
You ever held on to that and said you're going to use it for a different day?
Yeah.
Okay, now I want you to think about that situation. You got it with you, and you're going to go, hey, I'm going to take a couple my kids out or somebody out. We're going to go over to this get the free ice creams, and you show up there, and you forgot the coupons. I think you chalk that up to like I should have remembered the coupons, and you still buy ice cream for everybody. I think. That is the situation we're talking about here. The minute they said, hey, I invited these preteens, I would have thought, dang, I probably should have been more specific about this situation. Yeah.
by the way, I got you a campsite. Don't bring anybody else. I feel weird that you would have to say that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think I would say, like, figure out, I would have thought in my head next time, sure. I got to figure out a way to frame this up where this doesn't happen. But I would not have even brought it up because now you're going to put your friends in a rough situation. What are they going to do? Call these preteens and go, no, my grandpa said I could come out with them and now I'm not allowed. I can't come anymore. It just puts everybody in an awkward thing. So just chalk up your mistake. Enjoy the time for whatever it was. Like, it does feels like you might be like this has all the enamorings of a, I don't know, Operation Board Game Convention. Like something you really love that other people may only casually enjoy that you're inviting people out of. And you have to recognize you're the quirky dude
it's
here.
It's true. If you're the curator of the Pabst Blue Ribbon Museum, you should not be surprised if some like hooligans come in at times and are like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
And they are hating on something that you really love.
These Budweiser boys are being irreverent in here.
And so, Budweiser just boys.
Chalk here's up the thing your mistake. Is, I think that you're right. Like, I think you can have a generous attitude for this, but like, I don't know. It feels rude.
I mean, I can see why you're saying that.
Grandpa probably thinks he's providing an educational experience for the grandkids.
I mean, he could have done that on his own dime with his own campsite.
He's probably like, I don't know stars either.
He waited until
campsite cost.
It's expensive.
If I got birdwatching friends and said, "Hey, we're go camping with us," I'd say, "Hey, grandson, come with us. You can. I can't teach you about birds, but these guys can."
Right. Seems like a fun thing.
I'm an amateur ornithologist and have been for the last 25 years.
You've elevated your.
We saw a migratory pattern at the blue-footed booby, and we asked for our friends, who are my brother and sister-in-law, to come out with us, and they brought their granddaughters, and I shot him. And was I right?
Yeah,
Mike. Campsites are not that expensive.
No.
It's like $30 a night.
That's what I was thinking. Like, it's not even big dollars.
No, it's not.
Unless you like got a campsite that also doubles as a golf and country club. Like you went out into the woods and spent the $30 fee to pay for water and trash at the joint. And they brought their own camper.
Yeah, I would presume, like, unless someone gave me, maybe they just don't, you feel like you should know the guy. Like if you're friends.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should understand that he's like
this. Your brother-in-law and sister-in-law.
Yeah. Well, that's friend territory. That's not really family, is it?
Hey, I love my brother-in-law and sister-in-law.
You as friends. So anyway, maybe you should have known this. But like if someone has some sort of what feels like an educational opportunity, I think they should have asked for sure.
Sure.
But I wouldn't be surprised that someone would like, hey, stargazing, really cool thing to go, hey, I'd like my kids to participate. And maybe it's because, like, I'm in the homeschool thing. Like, we presume everything is some sort of excuse for a learning opportunity. Like, hey, we're going to go to the pizza restaurant. Can my kids come along and, like, look in the kitchen and learn from it?
Also,
like,
how self-centered do you have to be the one that goes, I refuse to share this celestial level event with other humans that I didn't want there in the first place? It's the stars. They ain't yours, friend. Regardless of your amateur love of astronomy.
Yeah,
red dwarf.
I guess if the question is, do I think the guy was wrong for not asking first, I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, it would have cost nothing to say, hey, do you mind if I bring my granddaughters
like it
along?
Seems like just a, I don't know, like I just can't imagine someone inviting me somewhere and then me inviting more people like without asking them.
Would you feel like it's different? Let's say the arrangement was like me and my family. And then one of my daughters had a neighbor friend that they brought along. Would you consider that the same thing? Or is it because it's a different type of person? Because there's already kids in my example.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It just feels like it changes the whole dynamic of the trip.
You turn from a Corona night to an O'Doul's.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't even think it's that, you know, but I just think like if you were planning on. Like, if they had in their head, like, we're going to go out and watch the stars, and then we're just going to sit around and have adult conversation, and, like, you know.
Or
and,
be quiet, which is not going to happen with three preteen kids.
Right. Like, and now they've got to go to bed, or, like, you know, whatever. Like, it just feels like it changed the thing. So I understand how the gal is disappointed. She had an event planned, and she took the initiative to find the campsite, pay for it, get deposit going, and, like, this will be nice to just spend time with my brother and sister-in-law. And then they don't have, like, they're old enough where they don't have any direct kids. And then they, like, introduced three preteen girls out of nowhere.
Sure.
You know, like, so I guess I sympathize with this gal just a little bit. I think that you're right. You can have a generous thought about it and go, hey, man, this is what it is. we're not going to like disrupt the whole apple cart just because it didn't go my way. But like, dang, sure. You know, if you'd have just asked me, I would have told you what I was thinking. And then this would have been fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So Secular says, your brother-in-law should not have invited anyone along without clearing it with you first. What they did may have been well-intentioned, but it was also rude. If any of these girls showed an interest in astronomy, in the future, you might choose to invite them for this kind of event, but their presence should not have been sprung on you the way that it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can accept it.
I appreciate that you ended that with, yeah.
Yeah, I just, yeah. You know. Yeah.
That is it.
It just seems unfortunate. All right, you want to do one more?
Yeah, let's
do
one more. To me than right now.
Dear Life from the Path, I've been married for nearly 20 years. My mother-in-law has always been passive-aggressive, critical, and mixing into our business. My husband never told her to stop because he never could stand up to her. Sadly, I didn't stand up for myself either. I finally had it and cut her off to an extent. My husband says he supports me, but he has never shown it. He now often speaks to her away from the house and lies to me about it. Since I stood up to her, he has also pulled back from me emotionally, which he was barely capable of before.
Oh, gosh.
She still mixes into every part of his life and gives him speeches like he's still her little child. I am finished with this unhealthy dynamic. I insisted on therapy, but I have seen no change in him at all. He goes only because I force him. Have you any advice? Great, now he's got two gals forcing him to do crap.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Sounds like he married someone just like his mother that doesn't know that she's just like his mother yet.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, you've not gone on into the relationship far enough to recognize that you're the same woman.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see when your child someday has to have an awful relationship with their spouse because of your existence in their lives.
She doesn't like her because she's just like her.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean by stood up to her, but it didn't sound like it was a well-seasoned, calm affair.
Yeah, right. You know, stood up to her never feels like it was something that goes, hey, I really want to make certain that we find common ground, and this is the things that I value, and I recognize that you value these things, and I think that there's a place that we can find that's in between these two things to talk about this calmly.
Yeah.
It feels like it's like a, well, you, Esmeralda, I'm tired of you talking to Danny this way. Yes. Get out of our lives.
Yes, this feels definitely that way. So, like, there's nuances to this story. It feels like you might not including because it would make you look bad.
Can we get AI to write the ballad of Danny and Esmeralda?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, so, I mean, what was the question? Have you any advice?
Yeah. Shut up. Take a good hard look at yourself in the mirror and see Esmeralda.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, your husband's the problem, not your mother-in-law, right? Like, what you allow will continue. And so if he is going to continue to allow this, then it's going to continue to happen. It is his barrier, or it's his boundary to set up and to enforce. And so, like, this is not her problem. This is not your mother-in-law's fault. This is your husband's fault for allowing it.
Yeah, and especially since he's sneaking around with his mother.
Yeah.
I hated saying that, and that felt so creepy, but not a Jocasta situation there, Oedipus. I just mean that, like, he's sneaking around to talk to his mom behind your back.
Yeah, you married a wuss. Like, that's the thing you're upset about, is like you asked him, hey, we need to create some boundaries here, and he refused to do it. And then you let it build up and you snapped, and now you're not on speaking terms or whatever ain't going well with the mother-in-law, and like he's still trying to maintain as if none of that happened. And so, like, your husband's a wuss, and so just know that you're mad at him. If you can walk away with anything here, your concern is with your husband and not with your mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Those conversations should be left for him. Okay, Secular says, I agree that the dynamic you have described is unhealthy. It appears your husband is more bonded with his mother than he is with you. Do nothing on impulse or out of anger. That sounds too late. If you are truly burned out, continue talking with your therapist to help you decide how to move forward. I mean, he agreed to go to therapy. Most people are saying, like, hey, my husband refuses to go to therapy. Right. This guy's like, yeah, I guess.
He only goes because I tell him to.
You know why he goes? Because he's a wuss, right? Right. He won't even stand up.
To his women.
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know. This dude.
I'm really excited for my in-laws. Like, I really lucked out. I know, I'm not trying to, they don't listen to the show. I'm not trying to do them any lip service or anything like that, but I lucked out so hardcore with my in-laws. They're the friggin' best. They love Jesus. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. All right, sorry.
Not the case for this guy.
No.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us on this first Live from the bath of 2025, this will be year 15 of broadcasting here on the program. And so, Mr. Kit, maybe you love the show. Start making your way back into the back episodes. There might be some good stuff back there for you to enjoy.
How would we know if people love the show, Ben? Could they text us or call us on something?
I don't know if you want to do that.
Because there's like a specific complaint line that we have, isn't there?
That would be handy to have.
I'm not familiar.
It's the Eisenhower Life in the Path complaint line, right? It's 515-517-0085. Is that correct?
That doesn't ring any bells to me.
Oh, okay. All right.
Has that thing ever seen any action?
It gets a text message every couple of months.
Yeah. But that's pretty good.
Hmm. Sometimes it tells about how great I am.
It's worth keeping the phone on. Comes free with Gmail, doesn't it?
I don't know what you guys are talking about, but if this thing exists, you could hit it up. The Bob Eisenhower Life in the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. No one's going to answer the phone, so don't worry about us picking it up for you introverted types. Just go ahead and leave us a message and or give us a text, and we'd love to hear from you here at the start of the year. I believe we're back on regular recording schedules here, so we should see you next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.